And may it please the court.
Can I just wait? Let's wait till the courtroom gets cleared so we can all hear. All right, go ahead. Mr. Moss.
Are we ready?
Yes.
May it please the court. My name's Gary Moss. I'm the attorney for New York, New York Hotel and Casino, and have been for the entire 14 years that this case has been going on, and have participated in every one of the pieces of litigation. There are basically two issues in this case, and we view them both equally important. The first issue is whether Section 7 of the National Labor Relations Act grants an employee who works for ARC Las Vegas a lease company with New York, New York, that provides food service, is entitled to have access to the public areas of the hotel to distribute literature to customers of both New York, New York, and the ARC restaurants regarding the handbillers' Section 7 activities. The second issue, which we don't want to get lost here, miss the trees for the forest or forest for the trees here, is the question of whether the areas where those handbills are being distributed are work areas within the meaning of the National Labor Relations Act, such that New York, New York could have prohibited the distribution in those areas because of that concept. Now, obviously, the access issue is one that is getting most of the attention in this case. And it's a difficult issue, but it's the position of New York, New York, as you know, that Section 7 does not provide any such access rights to non-employees, even if they work for ARC, to have access to the public areas of the hotel to distribute literature to the customers.
We already have, as you well know, addressed this case. And
I know you did.
And the prior panel did not reach that conclusion with respect to the statutory interpretation or with respect to the statute and how it applies here.
Well, actually, Your Honor, I don't think that was...
It left a lot. That argument was raised to the prior panel, and they sent it back to the board, but they didn't say that... They didn't agree with your position. They just said it's up to the board to explain within its discretion and left a bunch of questions with the board, right?
I know that, Your Honor, but I don't think that constitutes any determination, certainly not a determination that our position is wrong. What the basis for sending it back was is that after the board had issued its decisions in the first two cases and had relied upon a couple of previous cases, Gafers and Southern Services, and didn't consider Leachmere in that analysis, the court the last time said, we can't tell whether you gave Leachmere any consideration or not. We don't know the basis for your decision. Mm-hmm. So you send it back and do it over again and send it back to us, and we'll look at it this time when you did the analysis that we've suggested and then make our determination. So there's nothing in that prevents you from agreeing with us that Leachmere, as a Chevron step one determination of the rights under Section 7, and that's what it is. There are two Supreme Court cases that said Leachmere says Section 7 does not provide access rights for non-employees, regardless of the circumstances. That's what it says.
Well, not regardless of the circumstances, because the circumstances different here from that case is this is the non-employee's workplace. This is the contractor's employee's workplace. And that's one reason, the panel sent it back to the board to say this is something the Supreme Court hasn't specifically addressed. That is the employee of a contractor a stranger, or is that employee closer to an employee, not an off-site employee, but an employee of the property owner? And the board decided that the contractor employee was closer to the employees of New York, New York, than a stranger, because it is that employee's workplace as well.
Let me respond to that in two ways, Your Honor. First, it is true that they're contract employees. I mean, and that means the facts are somewhat different, although they're not all that much different than Leachmere, because Leachmere involved a big shopping center, number of locations, one company that was being targeted by non-employees. But Leachmere, we contend, the rationale of Leachmere, of that case, we contend, says, regardless of whether there are circumstances that are different, if you're a non-employee, Section 7 has said you don't have any rights. Now, that might produce a harsh result. Some people might not like the way that comes out. But as the court did in Neal, said sometimes we get harsh results as a result of an interpretation of the statute. The answer to that, if you think there's a problem with the application, is to go to Congress and ask them to correct that within the meaning of the Act, if the Act has been determined to mean this. And Leachmere says you don't have rights if you're employees. On another point, though, you said this is their workplace. that concept gets bannered around in this case a lot, but it actually is inaccurate. The areas where these people were handing out literature was not their workplace. These were public areas. The Leachmere people, and there's this whole concept, I understand, that says a workplace is a good place to exercise your Section 7 rights, and that's because that's the place where you meet where your fellow employees are working with you, and you have the ability to communicate with them because of that. These people weren't trying to communicate with their fellow employees. They were trying to communicate with customers.
Well, I understand that there are non-work areas in the restaurant. I suppose there's a locker room or something like that. But there was a hostess stand in front of the Gonzales. Now, that means that ARC, that was a work area for ARC, or at least New York, allowed that hostess stand to be there. My understanding was the handbillers were standing, I guess, where the hostess stand was. In other words, they weren't circulating. They were in front of the restaurant.
They were a few feet back from the restaurant.
Okay. Yeah. In other words, my question, I guess, is this. If it is not disruptive for the hostess stand to stand there beyond the leasehold of ARC within the property of New York, and hand out menus, what is the difference between that and a handbiller standing approximately there handing out handbills?
Because the hostess is involved in providing a service to a guest. And that service is part of a much greater function of New York.
Let me just interrupt you. Is it because the waitress is doing work in the work area and the handbiller is soliciting in the work area? That is the work area of ARC.
We're saying that by our guests come to New York for a lot of reasons, and we develop this controlled environment to entice them to come there, to come away, to get away, leave your problems at home. Food service is one of them. We want them to come to the hotel and have a positive experience. When they go to Gonzales, and go to the hostess stand, that person's job is to assist them in having that experience. If you have an individual who's a few feet away and approaches and says, oh, here, we're having a labor dispute, we think that it's patently obvious that that's going to have the potential for bothering or troubling the guest, whose then view of their experience at New York, is going to be different. If they're troubled by it, they may not come back. And so that's the difference in what the two things are that are happening there.
And is it your position that the whole corridor is a work area?
Yes.
Either ARC's work area within the area that has the hostess stand, or New York's area where it has slot machines on the other side of America, and even if it doesn't have slot machines, it's a work area?
Yes.
And
yes.
Why?
Because there are functions being performed, and the board agreed with us that there are all kinds of work being performed in the Port of Cashier and in these areas. There was no dispute about that. They just said that the work was not incidental to the operation of the hotel, and that therefore it was a non-work area by definition. We're saying that places where there are large numbers of employees performing work that's related to the operation of the hotel, by definition, has to be a work area, particularly in these public areas, because there, the opportunity or the possibility that those people are going to have an encounter with a guest that could be negative is very great, because there are thousands of people walking up and down that corridor every day. And if you've got somebody who's doing work in that area is there to assist in that area, that effort, and there's a chance that those people in doing their work are going to have an encounter with a guest. And so we call that a work area to prevent further activity in that area that will enhance that possibility. Now, there is a point I do want to make on the work area concept. It's our view that this entire decision, but particularly the work area decision, is illogical and inconsistent. And the reason for that is that if you look at the two parts of the decision, the work area decision, the access decision. The access decision, when it made the determination on the access case, the board established a set of criteria that would be able, that would assist in identifying the ARC employee who might have an opportunity to make an access claim. Those criteria were A, that person works regularly on the property, and B, that he be engaged in work that is integral to the operation of New York, New York, integral to the operation. When they reached the conclusion on the work area, the board relied almost entirely on a case called Santa Fe Hotel. Santa Fe Hotel is a case that operates under the premise, and this is an accepted premise, the premise that there are two types of work in a hotel, two categories of work. Work that is done in furtherance of gaming and lodging. Those are the two things that are considered to be the primary functions. And work that is done for all other reasons. Work that is done for all other reasons is called incidental work. Incidental because it's not directly related. Well, the problem is that the work that the ARC employees did, food service, under that definition, is incidental work. Yet the board says it's integral work. We say work can't be incidental and integral at the same time. So either the application of the analysis on the access case is wrong, or the analysis on the work area is wrong.
Well, why doesn't lodging incorporate eating? I mean, are there any hotels that don't have restaurants? I'm sure there are, but I mean,
that don't have restaurants. No, Your Honor, they all do. I mean, the premise that there's only two kinds of work that are important, lodging and gaming, doesn't make a lot of sense, but that's the accepted premise. And applying that premise in the way they did here leads you to a result that doesn't make any sense.
But why doesn't lodging incorporate dining? I mean, that Santa Fe doesn't say lodging doesn't incorporate dining, does it?
No, it says that anything that isn't directly related to gaming and food and lodging is incidental. If it's not related to that, it's incidental. Okay. Doesn't matter if it's a, and believe me, in today's Las Vegas, that probably doesn't make a lot of sense, but it's the law, at least for the moment. And if you apply that law, you end up with a decision that doesn't seem to make sense. And I see I've got 56 seconds.
We'll give you a couple minutes in reply.
Okay. All right. Do you want me to stop now?
You can take your time.
Well, there's one other point. Right. You know, the issue with the access is obviously important. But nonetheless, this is a decision by the NLRB. And when they make decisions, they are obligated to make sure that they do a detailed and reasoned consideration of all the reasons for why they came to their conclusion. In this case, This case involves an interpretation of a string of Supreme Court cases. We've all read them all. We know what they say. Every one of those cases, every one of them, says that Babcock's initial admonition that there is a distinction of substance in the rights of non-employees and employees to have access to a property. It's a substantive distinction. Employees have a better claim for access than non-employees. This case, the board actually acknowledged that and then completely ignored it. They came to the conclusion, after a lengthy analysis, that the ARC employees had equivalent, if not superior, access rights than the employees of New York, New York.
Board's emphasis on your client's contracting ability suggests, at least to the board, that there are ways that the owner, the property owner, can exert its authority to limit these Section 7 rights. And indeed, the board said, you know, we leave open the possibility that the owner can come forth with evidence that there's substantial interference with its ability to carry out, you know, its main functions.
But, Your Honor, they still concluded that the ARC employees have the equivalent rights of New York employees, putting aside the rights of the contractor through, you know, control through contract. That flies in the face of those Supreme Court decisions, yet, and the board came to that conclusion and offered no explanation as to why they can make that conclusion and that that would be consistent with the statutory scheme that was being interpreted in Babcock's. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Ms. Jin?
Good morning. May it please the court, Amy Ginn for the National Labor Relations Board. The court in the prior case tasked the board with determining the access rights of the ARC employees to the New York property to engage in Section 7 activity by applying the principles derived from Supreme Court decisions and by considering the policy implication of any accommodation of rights. The board engaged in reasoned decision-making to answer the court's questions on remand and arrive at a test consistent with the purposes of the Act. To go back to the court's remand decision, the court made clear previously that no Supreme Court case yielded a definitive answer as to whether the ARC employees should be treated as employees or non-employees under the Act.
Of course, this court said we're remanding to the board, and there are a host of questions, and the board has to decide whether they're employees or non-employees.
Correct, Your Honor.
And the board sort of didn't quite frame its answer that way.
The board did begin with that critical question in its decision, did begin with that critical question that the court has set forth. And the board, in its analysis, employed a less either-or framework that considered the statutory rights of the contractor employees as Section 2-3 employees under the Act and then accommodated all interests in light of that status. So the board did look at the interests both of the ARC employees and the interests of New York, to arrive at its standard. In doing so, the board also addressed and answered the additional questions that the court had presented. The board set forth as reasons for the standard that it's reached in terms of the ARC employees that they are, as I stated, statutory employees. They're exercising their own Section 7 rights, their own organizational rights, in stark contrast to the non-employee union organizers in Lechmere, who are exercising rights only derivative of the employees who actually worked on the property. The board considered also, in terms of addressing policy implications, as this court indicated that it should, that if Lechmere were to apply wholesale to contractor employees, those employees would have diminished rights based solely on the location of their workplace. The board also considered that the ARC employees were not outsiders to the property, so additional concerns such as those that the court looked at in the ITT Industries case as to offsite employees, those concerns would not necessarily be part of the analysis because these employees are already on site daily. They already come to work, they use the same entrances, they conduct business on the property, are already familiar with the corridors and how things work at the property.
Can I just follow up on Judge Rogers' question?
Sure,
in our prior case, we said the critical question in a case of this sort is whether individuals working for a contractor on another's premises should be considered employees or non-employees of the property owner. And then the board on remand said the primary question posed by the Court of Appeals could be read as posing an either-or choice for the board. We reject this framework. That seems inconsistent with the remand order just on its face right there, that the prior panel of this court said it's you have to determine one or the other, and the board says, no, we're not going to do that.
What the board did here, the board did address the question of the court as to whether they were employees or not employees, but did not pursue it in such a dichotomous framework. And I think that's the framework that the board was referring to, not that the board was not going to answer the court's questions, as throughout the decision they did, but that the board was going to look at it less as an either-or question in order to consider the interests of contractor employees in this unique situation. And it is a situation that has not been addressed by any Supreme Court decision, and that's what the court recognized previously.
But don't you think the prior panel decision at least framed the permissible bounds of what the board could do on remand?
I do believe, Your Honor, that there were permissible bounds set by that decision, but that the board did operate within those boundaries. If we consider that Babcock and Leachmere are at one end of a spectrum and Republic Aviation is at another end, in terms of Republic Aviation applying to, you know, the owner's own employees, the board then looked at an accommodation of interest that fell within that framework and within that spectrum between Leachmere and Republic Aviation. And in doing so, the board did not give the ARC employees the same rights as New York's own employees. The board gave an owner an opportunity that an employer may not have, an employer who's dealing with their own employees on the property may not have. And that is for an owner to say, we have, because of our property interests, we have heightened concerns that require us or that will allow us to lawfully exclude contractor employees from engaging in Section 7 activity that our own employees may be able to engage in. That is how the board set up the standard, to say that when an owner demonstrates that the activity of contractor employees significantly interferes with his use of the property in ways that that same activity by his own employees would not, then the owner may lawfully exclude those employees.
I thought the board left that open, candidly.
I'm sorry?
I thought the board left that open. You think the board's decision actually, what the intervener calls, set up a two-class system?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe that the, I believe that the board, as I said, chose to set up a framework in between this idea of a two-class system. So maybe I'm not understanding the question, but in terms of contractor employees, the board has done here, has set a standard analogous in many ways to the decision in ITT Industries for offsite employees, to say these individuals are statutory employees with Section 7 rights. This is their workplace. In this situation, this is their workplace. This is where it is, you know, the best place for them to exercise these rights. However, there may be instances, and this is what the board said it would look at on a case-by-case basis, there may be instances that we haven't thought of yet where an employer is going to come forward and say, we have a heightened property concern that deals with contractor employees, and their activity would interfere with our use of our property in a way that our own employees engaging in the same activity would not. Now, in this instance, New York did not make that type of showing, and therefore the board found that they did violate the act by not permitting the handbilling. To move on to the handbilling and the locations.
One more question on that. Definition of employee, do you think an employee of another company entirely would also be protected?
That's not what the board has addressed in this decision.
And right, but wouldn't a statutory interpretation concluding that a it applies to anyone who's an employee.
The board did not decide in this case that the ARC employees had these access rights simply because they were such statutory employees. That was one piece of the board's analysis. So the board actually set forward several specific parameters limiting its decision, narrowing its decision, saying that these are off-duty contract employees, making them statutory employees, who regularly work on the property and work integral to the owner's business, seeking to engage in organizational activity directed at potential customers of the employer, of their employer and property owner. So the board's decision does not encompass all statutory employees of any employer, but those statutory employees who work on the property regularly and work integral to the owner's business, such as here where, as was discussed previously, generally hotels and casinos are going to have some type of eating facility to keep people there. Also, in this instance, the record shows that ARC's rent actually, or the payments, were actually based in part on the volume of sales in the restaurants. To move to the hand billing and the work area question, the board found here in its prior decisions, after looking at the record, based on substantial evidence in the record as a whole, that these areas, both outside the entrance and outside the ARC restaurants, were non-work areas. The board did base its decision in part on its analysis in Santa Fe Hotel, a remarkably similar case as to the exterior access. The board also, however, looked at additional decisions in the retail area, such as the Marshall Fields decision, and was able to say that the concerns there about limited space in narrow retail aisles are simply not the same concerns here. In a spacious passageway that is open to the public, we are talking about 27 feet across from the America restaurant to any slot machines. We're also talking about outside the building entrances, area where some work tasks are performed, as the board recognized, but that these tasks, such as bellmen or baggage handlers, were incidental to the main function of the hotel. The board also, however, looked at the amount of time and the space in which these tasks were taking place and found, for example, that cleaning and maintenance functions, both outside and in the passageways, generally occur on the graveyard shift, not during the time that these employees were attempting to handbill. To address one other area, which is the audience that the ARC employees were trying to reach with their hand billing, we have cited in our brief this court's decision in Stanford Hospitals, where the court said that this court has never found a substantive distinction between Section 7 activity or solicitation activity directed at fellow employees versus non-employees. And for that reason, the fact that the ARC employees here were handing hand bills to customers in pursuit of their organizing attempt at their employer has no bearing on the analysis. Additionally, just to go back to the board's task on remand, the board looked at and considered all of the additional questions that the court set forth in terms of the parameters for remand. So not only the question of employee versus non-employee of the owner, the board considered state trespass law, decided that the ARC employees were not invitees. The board did not give the ARC employees any superior access rights to New York's own employees. And the board did fully consider the company's property rights in making this accommodation of interest in this test.
All right.
Thank you. The board asked that its order be in full.
All right. Mr. McCracken.
Thank you, Your Honor. And may it please the court, Richard McCracken for the intervener. The way I read Judge Kavanaugh, that line from the board's decision was that, as Ms. Ginn said, it was not a choice of either non-employee or employee, in the sense that if they are in one category, then they have no rights, and if they're in the other category, then they have full rights under Republic Aviation. But as the court said in Hudgens, it is a spectrum, and there are several factors and different points along the spectrum. I believe that that's what the board meant, not that it was rejecting this court's approach to the case, but it was saying it's more complex than that. And you can see why the board said that, because in this case, before this court, the petitioner has done exactly the same thing, which is to say that it is a dichotomous decision. It's either employees and full rights or non-employees and no rights. That is not the law that the Supreme Court has established. Hudgens is really the most important case, and it, because the whole ownership and property rights notion that the petitioner puts forward is completely undercut by Hudgens. In Hudgens, there was picketing by employees of one of the tenants of the shopping center. And it was not in a work area of the tenant. It was not in the tenant's leasehold. It was out in the corridor of the shopping center. The court said there was no First Amendment right to do that following Lloyd Corporation versus Tanner, but did say that there might be a National Labor Relations right to do that. If it were true that property owners could never be held to violate the act by restricting that kind of conduct, there would have been no remand in that case. Instead, there was a remand, and the court ticked off the factors that should be taken into account. And they included the nature of the conduct, the nature of the dispute, and the nature of the ownership interest involved. On remand, the NLRB found that, in fact, the property owner there, the shopping mall owner, had violated the act by stopping that picketing. The Hudgens case comes very, very close to this one. And this case is actually a more compelling one because of the very important fact that the employees here were employees who worked at this location. This is their workplace. As opposed to Hudgens, where they were shoe factory workers, shoe warehouse workers, who were picketing the retail outlet for their company in the mall. So it wasn't even their workplace. And yet the board found, and the Supreme Court gave them allowance to find, that that was protected activity vis-a-vis the property owner. One of the things that the petitioner studiously avoids is not only Hudgens, but the Eastex decision. Because in Eastex, the court deals with this question of, under Section 2.3, whether there needs to be a privity relationship, some sort of that the common law employer-employee relationship must exist before Section 7 rights exist. And the court rejects that notion by pointing to Section 2.3, which clearly states that someone is an employee even with respect to those who are not its immediate or his or her immediate employer. Once again, the petitioner insists that there must be a common law employee relationship. That's the focus of the reply brief. But no cases are cited for that proposition. And Eastex, which does deal with the question, is not cited, nor is Section 2.3 cited, because these are fatal to the argument. Another thing that distinguishes this case from Hudgens and makes it more powerful is the question of nature of activity. In an effort to avoid the real facts of this case, the petitioner keeps insisting that this was area standards activity, pushing it into the mode of the Sears Roebuck case, and more towards Leachmere, when in fact it was organizational activity by the employees at this location. They passed out a leaflet that talked about their wages as compared to the wages of the other employees of New York, New York, who are unionized. It did that, yes, but it was not about a desire to complain that the area standards were not up to those in the surrounding competitive employers, which is how the Supreme Court described area standards picketing in the Sears Roebuck case. Instead, the leaflet concludes by asking the recipients to tell the management of ARC that ARC should recognize and negotiate a fair contract with its workers. Well, that's organizational in the fullest sense. This was an organizational leaflet in the context of an organizational campaign, as the court recalls from the ARC case, where the employer involved committed a lengthy series of unfair labor practices. In fact, this all arose out of an organizing campaign, an organizing campaign that was met by a barrage of serious unfair labor practices, including the termination of the employees who conducted the leafleting in this case. As a result of their leafleting at what would normally be thought to be non-work areas, namely the employee cafeteria and the locker room, the Ron Isomura, one of the same people who leafleted out in front of New York, was also terminated for trying to leaflet in the locker room, one would think a non-work area, and told he could not leaflet in the employee cafeteria. Thank you.
All right. How much time does Mr. Moss have? Oh, that's right. Why don't you take 2 minutes?
I just have a couple of comments. With respect to Mr. McCracken's comment that he thinks Hudgens is the most important case here, I would point out that in Lechmere, the court said nothing in Hudgens and these other cases changes our view that Babcock prevails and that there are no Section 7 rights of access for non-employees. On the Marshall Fields issue about the aisleways and the adjacent aisles and hallways, counsel cited the facts about how wide the aisles were at New York. We don't know at all how wide the aisles are at Marshall Field, so we have no idea if that's a valid comparison or not. And on the audience issue, it may or may not make sense in terms of who your audience is as to what your rights are, but this circuit has already held that in communication-driven Section 7 rights, in other words, rights that are based upon communicating with an audience, in every case, you have to determine that the audience is not available through regular means of communication in order to have access to come onto the property. Thank you. I fail to ask that the court vacate the petition.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.